All right, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to be giving the report of the Small Mesh Multispecies Fisheries Committee, otherwise known as the Whiting Committee in past tense, but with your new approach for dealing with committees, that is pelagics. I head the Pelagic Committee, and in my role as chair of the Pelagic Committee, I chaired the Small Mesh Multispecies Committee meeting that was held last week. Thank you for that honor, Mr. Chairman. It's proving to be quite challenging since I haven't dealt with whiting too much in the past. When I think of pelagics, I think more of sea herring and dogfish, but clearly the small mesh multispecies are extremely important. And reflecting that importance, there are a number of documents in your binder that describe what the committee had to review, and I'll just quickly identify what those documents are, because I will reference them. Number one, goals and objectives for the small mesh multispecies fishery. Number two, purpose of the small mesh multispecies management action. The third, biological reference points and trends for small mesh multispecies. The fourth is a brief document showing and describing the advisory panel statement. Number five, requirements for limited access fisheries, describing the different requirements for all of the species that we manage. Multi-species that are also managed by the Mid-Atlantic Council are included in the list as well. Number six, limited access qualification criteria, preliminary data, and I emphasize that indeed it is preliminary data. Seven, a draft EIS table of contents to give you some idea as to where we're headed with an EIS, what needs to be in it. Those are the seven documents. There's also a summary of our meeting that you either have or is about to be or has just been passed out. I apologize for the lateness of your getting that particular document. However, it's not going to be as imposing as you think, and the amount of the decisions that need to be made today are not as many as you might have been led to believe. The only thing you need to do today, Council, is to consider the objectives that we are recommending you adopt. There'll be a number of other recommendations to you that will describe what the Small Mesh Multispecies Committee is up to. That is the course of action that we are taking. And we look to the Council for guidance as to whether or not we're going in the right direction. If not, then point us in the right direction as you see it. We look for some corrections in the course that we're taking, if indeed you feel we do need to be corrected. All right. We met last week, November 8, to follow up on the Council's decisions made at the September meeting to develop those objectives for the small mesh multispecies FMP, and that means for whiting, silver hake, red hake, otherwise known as ling, and then the offshore hake, the black-eyed whiting, and I'll admit I've never seen a black-eyed whiting. I've been offshore, but I've never seen one. I assume they do exist, and we're managing them. So those are the species that fall into the mix, otherwise known as small mesh multispecies. Now, recall that we manage these three species under the multispecies FMP, but because they are harvested differently and subject to different regulations than other multispecies groundfish species, this council is considering managing the three under a separate fisheries management plan, with whiting being the focus of our attention. I recall that in 1999, a few years ago, we created this so-called small mesh multispecies management unit through Amendment 12 to the multispecies plan. And I don't expect you to recall all of the details of Amendment 12. Just recall that it's the small mesh multispecies management unit that we are now dealing with as a consequence of that action we took back in 1999. Also back then, we adopted overfishing definitions for the northern and southern stocks of silver and red hake and for the offshore hake. Now, I'm sure we all remember that the council developed a scoping document earlier this year, and then we held 6 public hearings, May and June, to get public comments on 4 issues. The first one, should there be limited entry in the small mesh multi-species fishery that currently remains one of the few open access fisheries in New England. The second issue was, should we use hard TACs to more effectively prevent overfishing, whether the fishery becomes limited entry or remains open access. The third, should there be restrictions on juvenile whiting fishery to increase the yield and maintain fishing mortality at acceptable levels? And then finally, should we develop a mechanism to allow fishermen to develop dedicated access privileges such as sectors, community quotas, and harvesting cooperatives? Also, if we do use hard TACs, actual hard quotas, should we link them to those dedicated access privileges such as ITQs? To refresh your memory again, currently there are about 50 to 200 vessels that represent the core fleet targeting the small mesh multi-species, and 700 to 800 vessels may occasionally land small amounts of red hake, whiting, and offshore hake. We also indicated at the public hearings that if we decided to create a standalone FMP for the small mesh multi-species, we could still take no action, meaning that there'd be no changes in current regulations affecting the small mesh multi-species fisheries. Now, all the specifics, all the details of this initiative were described by former Chairman David Gethel and Chad Demers at our last council meeting. You know, they reviewed the scoping hearings, they reviewed all the comments that were received at the hearings, and then subsequent to the hearings. Therefore, my committee had all this information at its disposal to help us develop recommendations for objectives to be considered here today. We also had at our committee meeting a one-page summary that I alluded to before of recommendations from our advisory panel. The advisory panel met August 23rd. So, with that said, you need to focus on the November 8 one-page summary. I'm sorry, the November 8 summary of the committee meeting, and also on the advisor's recommendations. And I will note during the review of committee progress what the advisor's views were relative to the actions that we took. Moreover, it probably would be helpful for you to just jot a few notes for yourself regarding the current status of the stocks, as best that status can be judged. It always helps to know whether or not these stocks are overfished or whether overfishing is occurring. Right now, overfishing is not occurring, and the whiting stocks, for whiting stocks and for red hake, overfishing is not occurring. The January 2006, not too long ago, that whiting assessment indicated that the abundance index for the northern whiting stock has declined since 1999 due to low recruitment, and the index for the southern stock has continued to remain below the target level. There are some figures in the documents that you have before you. I'm not going to reference them right now, but you know, those documents describe in figure form where we stand with current knowledge of the status of the stock and fishing mortality levels. We have 9 recommendations for the council to consider, but there's really only one action item, as I indicated, and that's the objectives for the small mesh multi-species FMP. The other recommendations indicate where we are right now at this very early stage of development of the FMP and very early stages of analysis of FMP, that is, the database that we're now using to help us put this FMP together. So, to repeat, if the council prefers that we alter our course by giving us specific guidance that differs from the 7 recommendations I'm going to describe and that are listed in that memo you have before you, then please respond accordingly. Now, the summary of the meeting begins with a statement regarding the objectives, and frankly, it's a bit misleading, and this is not Chad's fault. Chad obviously has been providing us with great staff support on this effort. He's been working as chair of the plan development team to go over all of the data that exists to help us out to determine such things as limited entry qualification criteria, important aspect of one of our recommendations here today. Chad and I in particular have had kind of a back and forth discussion about purpose and objectives and goals, and that discussion will probably continue. However, suffice it to say, the committee has agreed that we do have five objectives for this council to consider for the amendment. And these objectives flow from earlier discussions by this council that are reflected in the scoping document. So if you have the scoping document with you, the document that went to public hearing, you'll find that handy, but it's not critical for our discussions here today. So let's begin by my making the motion on behalf of the committee, and Karen has that to put on the screen. And I will move on behalf of the committee that we adopt five objectives for this amendment, and that they be, number one, Karen, if you will, we don't need the, okay, thank you. It's just, we're not going to adopt or approve a range of measures for this plan right now. We haven't got to that point. We're in the early stages. No range of measures yet. We're dealing specifically with the objectives. And by the way, I should also highlight that all of the work done by the committee was done by six of us. We have eight committee members. Six were present. Myself, of course, is chair. David Simpson is the vice chair. David Gethel, Terry Stockwell, and then the dynamic duo, Phil Rule and Jimmy Rule. Jim, representing the Mid-Atlantic Council, as always, did a wonderful job helping us out, as did David. I would certainly highlight David and Jim being fishermen who have been involved in small mesh fisheries for quite a while, and they have lended a great deal of assistance and wonderful expertise in helping us make some significant progress. And, of course, the advisors played a major role as well. I'm not downplaying the participation of other members, but I always like to highlight the members of the fishing community that are on the, as council members, are members of the committee. All right, so the first, we're recommending five objectives. The motion is that we adopt the following objectives. One, prevent excess capacity in the harvesting sector of the fishery. Number two, maintain fishing mortality at acceptable levels. Number three, control fishing mortality on juveniles as appropriate. Number four, allow for industry flexibility through dedicated access privileges. And number five, simplify and improve management of the small mesh multi-species fishery through the development of a standalone FMP. A second to the motion is not needed. Again, I'm making it on behalf of the committee. Now, I'll work us through the logic for the objectives that we are recommending you adopt today. Regarding the first one, prevent excess capacity in the harvesting sector of the fishery. The advisory panel agrees. The panel suggested three qualification criteria, and we agreed with their suggestion. Unless the council instructs otherwise, this is the path we're taking. Limited entry vessels must have possessed a valid permit as of the control date, March 25th, 2003. That's the first element of it. Second, unless the council instructs otherwise, analyses of the impacts of limited entry will be done using the following qualification criteria. And again, these are shown and described in the summary of our committee meeting. We'll use January 1, 1993 dealer data. And we'll use January 1, 1995 VTR data. 1994 data and earlier are not considered to be viable, years for VTR data. Therefore, we're restricted to the January 1, 1995 data onwards. We were given preliminary data from Chad and the plan development team. That data relating to those particular time periods that I just mentioned still needs to be checked for accuracy and completeness. Chad was very emphatic about that. And you can see from the table in document number 6, if you would please reference that, towards the back of that document, actually it's towards the towards the back of the document, second page from the end, you'll find, pages are not numbered, so bear with me, you'll find qualifiers based on total landings, dealer landings, and VTR landings from 1994 through 2005, broken down by different categories, that is by different amounts of landings, 1 pound up to 1 million pounds, and you can see that. Oh, hold on a second, that's the wrong one. Sorry about that, it's the wrong table. Okay, towards the front of the document, second page in. Total and average landings, broken down by dealer and by VTR, 1994 through 2005, Silver Hake, Red Hake, Offshore Hake, and total landings. And you can see from an examination of that data that there's a significant difference between what the dealers reported for landings and what comes out of the VTR. Therefore, the plan development team is chewing on this, and we expect that they'll give us some further advice as time moves on and they have more opportunity to check for the accuracy of the database, and they give us some recommendation regarding the database we should actually use in establishing the qualification criteria. But for now, anyways, we're moving forward with that analysis of qualification criteria, the dealer data and the VTR data by different time periods, January 1, 93 for dealer data and January 1, 1995 for the VTR data. We're also going to analyze another beginning date. This came out of the public hearings, the scoping hearings, and certainly the advisors picked up on it, the advisory panel. We're going to analyze another beginning date for the verified landings in 1981. This date was used in Amendment 12, but it proved to be a problem. This was raised at our committee meeting. The National Marine Fisheries Service disapproved the use of that date. At least that was our understanding at the time. So at our meeting, it was agreed that the service, Mike Petney and company, would go back to those earlier documents, the decision memo, to determine the reasons why the disapproval occurred. The committee may eventually have to reject the 1981 date as the time period for us to reflect on to determine qualification criteria. But if we reject it, that rejection will be, I'm sure, influenced by the National Marine Fisheries Service views as to why it was inappropriate to begin with. Now, third, for each of these time periods, we're going to examine landing history. We're going to look at a range of minimum landings in any one year. And let's go back to that table that I incorrectly referenced at the get-go, but now it's appropriate. That's towards the end of that document, number 6. Where you can see qualifiers, numbers of vessels that would qualify based on total landings broken down by dealer and by VTR landings by different poundage category, 1 pound up to 1 million pounds. The committee felt it made a lot of sense for us not to be too burdensome with the staff and with the plan development team. Obviously, we'd like to take off the entire burden, but that's not likely. So we winnowed it down. The PDT will be looking at minimum landings of 1,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds, 50,000, 100,000, 500,000, and then 1 million pounds. So though we've narrowed the categories down from 13 to 6. Fourth, the committee was quite concerned about reemerging fisheries. This was another important issue raised at scoping hearings. You'll find it throughout the public comments. What about fisheries that used to be but are no longer in existence because whiting just haven't been around in those areas for a while, for a long time, off the coast of Maine, for example, down in the southern regions, at the northern and southern edges of the range, specifically of the current fishery, perhaps limited entry should not apply. That was a question that came up. Should it apply? Well, how do we examine that question? How do we provide the council with some guidance as to whether or not we should not have limited entry in those areas to allow those fisheries to reemerge if whiting reappear in those regions? To examine this question, we're going to consider as an option no limited entry in those areas. But what areas are we talking about? Well, we need an analysis first to help us identify what those areas are, where they are. So, unless the council instructs otherwise, the committee is going to examine where 90%, 95%, or 99% of the landings occurred during the different qualification year options with the data aggregated by statistical areas. Now, that data might reveal, might not, but it might reveal where limited entry is not necessary. And again, the purpose of this work, this analysis, is to address the desire for us to see if indeed historical fisheries should reemerge. All right, now all of what I've just said, bear with me, I know I'm going on, but this is the easiest way for me to deal with this. All of what I've just reviewed pertains to the first objective. That's to limit access in the small mesh multi-species fishery. Let me stop right there before I get on to the second objective and ask committee members if there's anything I need to highlight, if I've missed anything. Actually, I think I did miss something, and I think I did. One committee member made a motion, and the whole committee thought it was a good idea for us to make sure that we determine the extent to the numbers of fishermen that would actually be excluded from continuing to fish for whiting with the use of the control date. So an analysis will be done to look at the control date to current time to see the numbers of fishermen that actually would be impacted if indeed we did use that control date of March 25th, 2003. I think I've referenced it already. Anyways, that will be done, obviously. We need to make sure we know who would be out as a consequence of our using that control date. Again, committee members, if I've missed anything, please note what I've missed. And council members, if you have any questions regarding what I've said so far, and if you would like to give us, the committee that is, guidance as to something else we need to consider, please do so now.
John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. David, on the preventing excess capacity, I think is obviously a fine objective, and it's, I don't think anyone really would have too much of a problem with that. The committee seems to be going through a lot of examination of who was involved in the fishery at some point. I guess that's one way of looking at it, but what about looking at it from the standpoint of, well, okay, we've got a resource, we've got a, amount that could be harvested based on the status of the stock, and then do you match it up with how many people could be involved in that? Is that being looked at also?
Yeah, that, I believe we will be looking at that as well. That's a part of the overall task for determining the reasons for limited entry in this fishery. But that was the view expressed by the overwhelming view expressed by those who went to the scoping hearings. That was the view expressed by the advisory panel, that indeed we do need to have limited access, limited entry in the small mesh multi-species fishery in anticipation of possible increases in effort in that fishery as we evolve towards more and more restrictions on the multi-species fishery for groundfish itself. That was the, I think, principal justification for bringing this issue, this question of limited entry, out to the scoping hearings. That was some of the descriptive text that explained why we wanted to do this.
I just think that when we go through that iteration, it's always a balancing act. Obviously, when we say we want to have limited entry, it is who's in there, who's not in there, and what's the basis for deciding that. But one of the options should be looking at it as I described, capacity that may be present right now, and how much can they take of that resource. Is that 100%, 90%, 150%? You know, without being as concerned, and I don't say that lightly, on historic participation. I'm looking at that as just an option. I'm not advocating it, but I'm saying that to flesh it out fully, we should have that picture so we can avoid things that we did in the past, like qualifying everybody who had a pound of cod, for example, things like that.
Right, and that's why we're not using, for example, everyone who has 1 pound of cod as a historic, 1 pound of a small mesh multi-species. Anyone who has 1 pound of that, they would qualify to be in the fishery in the future. We clearly know that we were burned very badly with that strategy adopted by the council years ago. Anybody with 1 pound of multi-species gets a permit. It's quite a decision. It's had long-lasting effects on all of us. But to your specific point again, John, the committee is well aware of the fact that we've been told that there is a core fleet targeting these small mesh multi-species of 50 to 200 vessels. That's quite a bit already. But you have 700 to 800 vessels that occasionally land small amounts of whiting. So we need to reflect on how much have they been landing, and then to determine, based on what the resource can stand, how many vessels actually should be limited into this fishery. That's the kind of review and analysis the committee will be involved in over the coming months, and we'll clearly reflect on the point you just made, John.
Paul Howard.
Among John's questioning, the same thing on number two, the way we did it in Herring, which is the way that is in the capacity literature from NMSA stuff, is you look at the OY or MSY level and then determine which would be the harvesting capacity, and then match the with the harvest, and then match the number of vessels to harvest that. And if you're going to do limited entry only in an area and then have the other area open access, you'd have to allocate TAC and say, if MSY is 30,000 tons, we're going to assign so much to this area and make that fleet sustainable in that area, and then allow so much to the open access and match to the open access. And I think that's going to be very, very cumbersome, with the goal being an economically viable fleet that we don't create overcapacity. So I think the way you're going is probably the better way is the way we did Herring and John just mentioned, to avoid economic loss in the future.
I agree, Paul. I should also highlight now the fact that when we address that specific issue and approach that you just mentioned, we will be faced with a lack of information regarding such things as MSY, other very important reference points that we'll need to reflect on as we continue to develop this amendment. I'll highlight those particular absence of information as I get deeper into the report. But as it stands right now, we can't estimate maximum sustainable yield, and we can't specify fishing mortality, and a lot of our future calculations of fishing mortality and what it means for management of small mesh fisheries will involve our reliance on the bottom trawl survey. Since, again, it's an index-based survey, for the most part, Albatross, Bigelow, we see how it all works out as time unfolds and the Bigelow gets on the scene and we do the necessary calibration work. But, again, that's just a bit of a preview of the problems that this committee and then the full council are going to have, with this amendment. Actually, with or without the amendment, we still have that problem of gaps in the database and absence of, at this time, of reference points.
Dave Gaethel.
If I understand John Nelson's question correctly, I think what he's asking is how much could the core fleet, whatever we define that core fleet to be, increase their landings if, they had markets to increase their landings? And I think the answer to that is going to be it's almost impossible to tell because this is totally market-driven fishery at the moment. You want to come in with 5,000 pounds and sell them for a nickel, or do you want to come in with 1,500 pounds and sell them for 50 cents? Well, most people would say they'd rather have 1,500 pounds at 50 cents. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't increase their landings to 5,000 pounds if all of a sudden, markets develop for that. And that's the whole issue behind this particular plan, is the fact that if the market suddenly develops, the council will be well behind the eight ball in regulating the fishery, that the market will develop before the council can do anything about it, and that the fishery would be susceptible to being rapidly overfished. It appears to be, as people have said many times, almost self-regulating at the moment based on the markets, but that could change in a heartbeat. All it takes is somebody developing a new way to market whiting, and potentially everybody with a permit could be in the whiting fishery. So I'm not sure how we'll do that analysis, but we can certainly do it if that's what the council wants. At least try to give you some idea of what the current core fleet catches and what it could potentially catch, how much it could potentially increase its harvest if it was not restrained by market conditions.
Tom Hill and then Pat Kirkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, maybe I'm not sure where we are in this process, and maybe either you or David could enlighten me. Are we actually talking about the various alternatives that might go into the document? John's point I agreed with fully. I guess, is there going to be a time when the council talks about the range of alternatives that is going to go into the document? I see the objectives, but I mean, for rights-based dedicated access privileges, there can be a range of approaches in that one objective that the council might consider, and I was sort of dancing around that issue in some of the discussion today, and I wonder at what stage will we be talking about that as a comprehensive policy range of options, I guess, is what I would ask. When is that going to occur, or is it already occurring and I need to speak now?
No, we this is the first report back to the council. The first committee meeting after the scoping period has ended, and the document outlines the five objectives that are on the board right now that the committee's considered, and there's also, I think, seven or eight other motions that the committee took as they began to think about the objectives and about the plan. This is the time. We've got 55 minutes to talk about this, and I hope that the council or the individual members have taken the time to read through this document, and if there's things they don't like or there's omissions, this is the time to begin to shape things. Tom.
Well, okay, thank you. And I thought I had understood it, but I didn't realize that today was the day. I would encourage the council to ask the committee to develop a broad range of dedicated access privilege programs, including an IFQ system and several others that might, I hear the community sectors and the other things that are being talked about, but one of the cleanest ways to allocate opportunities based on some proposal through history and giving people individual allocations versus community allocations. It's the way that they then decide how to get together and do a community allocation, and I would hope that we would be a little more inclusive than exclusive in that area.
Pat Kirkle.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to comment on this issue of capacity in the fishery and matching capacity of the resource, and then also respond to some of the issues that were raised with respect to the data that might be used and the dates that might be used. I'm glad John raised the issue of matching the two, because I think that's exactly what the committee has to do, and that's what we've said repeatedly in developing the most recent limited access programs for these fisheries. David referred to the long-lasting effects. Well, there's two potential ways you could have long-lasting effects. One is too many qualifiers, and the other one that we've had a problem with is also allowing open access categories. I can't think of a situation where we've implemented a limited access program that's included some kind of open access category where we haven't just a few years later gone back and tried to plug the hole, so to speak. Without some sort of analysis of the capacity of the qualifiers matched to the resource, then I think we get ourselves into trouble. This is exactly the situation we had in the herring fishery, and I feel like we're starting to go down the same path as the herring. The early dates, the 81 date, was a major issue there. We raised strong objections to going back that far for a few different reasons. One is the quality and completeness of the data back that far. And then the other has to do with being able to justify qualifying vessels that haven't participated in a fishery, that haven't had any significant financial interest in a fishery for over 25 years, allowing them to qualify perhaps over someone who's fishing today. And so those are very difficult hurdles to overcome, and I would strongly urge the committee not to go down that path. I think we got too far down that path in herring and ended up at the 11th hour making some changes to fix that. The other is the issue of the using the VTR data versus the dealer data. Again, we've repeatedly said that the dealer, we consider the dealer information to be the best database to use for these kinds of qualification exercises. It's what we've used, I think, almost exclusively, as I can remember, for any limited access program we've adopted in the last 7 or 8 years or so. But what we've said is use the dealer data, as the primary database, and then if questions arise as to for an individual vessel on whether or not their records are complete, then the VTR information is used to complement that or to verify the dealer information. So it's a sort of a backup piece of information in the qualification process. But again, we believe that the dealer information is the best database to work from. And I think that's it.
Thanks, Pat. Anybody else? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the objectives expressed of preventing excess capacity, links you to basically the idea of the economics of the fishery. If you combine that with number two, the fishing mortality objectives, you know, you're basically, right now, as I understand it, you're describing the fishery as limited by the market condition, and it's not bumping up against any overall TAC limitations, but at some point they probably will. And what I'm wondering about is how you're dealing with the fact on page 2 of the memo, third paragraph from the bottom. I mean, it says part of the discussion on this was the lack of biomass estimates to help in setting total allowable catch. Well, I mean, that seems to me to be a fundamental problem that we'll get to at some point in this thing. And setting harvesting capacity right now, it seems to me we have to find some way to figure out what the total what's a viable tack setting mechanism in order to do that. Unless the committee goes towards like an ITQ type system where everybody gets even down to a little bit. I mean, you may want to limit it to some small amount, but if everybody got a little bit, then they could just trade it in and out, and the market would sort of take its role as governing what the capacity is, as well as the tax. So I think that right now, I think our objectives that we're setting here, depending upon the kinds of mechanisms we go, we might have a very difficult time in doing these objectives unless we did it in some sort of an ITQ type program. That's what it seems to me to indicate. And I wonder then what our capability of doing an ITQ program in this kind of fishery is, given the state of affairs of the Magnuson Act. Does the committee have any guidance on that?
Yeah. Well, perhaps it would be best if I just finished the report, covered all the objectives. I'm almost done. And that way we don't end up talking about objectives that I haven't already referenced regarding the justification for the rationale for our recommending these specific objectives. And that would be helpful, I think, to Jim, because she'll get a better feel for where the committee feels we are right now with the dedicated access privileges. So if there's no objection, Mr. Chairman, why don't I do that, okay? All right. The second objective is to maintain fishing mortality at acceptable levels, and, of course, one then has to ask the question, what's acceptable? We'll rely on the recent SARC information. That's SARC 42, not Framework 42, but SARC 42. You have that memo on biological reference points. We have thresholds, fishing mortality rate targets. We have values for northern and southern silver hake. For north and south red hake, all we have is an exploitation index for the northern hake. We have nothing for the southern area. And remember, exploitation rates are basically what did the fishery catch, and then you divide that by a survey biomass index that gives you a so-called exploitation index. So we're relying on the bottom trawl survey data, and, of course, this all means that we have to reflect on the presentation that was given by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center a few days ago on the Bigelow. Unfortunately, the Bigelow will be here soon, and our understanding is that additional monies have been made available to make sure as best we can that the calibration work can be done. So we look forward to that. That will help us out in a major way with these particular small mesh species, multi-species. So we look forward to that calibration work. At this time, we have no F target or threshold for the southern stock of red hake. That's not specified. Offshore hake, that's not specified. We do, however, have the 2003 SAFE report relying on false survey information. You don't have that document before you, but my point is there is information out there for us to use. We're going to reflect on it. And then after that reflection and acting on recommendations from the plan development team, we'll have something for you to consider relative to what the fishing mortality rates should be, what we should be shooting for, and what levels of catch would equate to those fishing mortality rate targets that we need to achieve. How to control fishing mortality, the hard TACs. We brought that concept to a public hearing. That was one of the major aspects of the public hearing document, hard TAC management. Should it be considered for the current management action? That was the question. Unless the council objects, we intend to move forward with three options at this time. That's no action using existing trip limits and mesh sizes to control fishing mortality. The second is the hard TAC, using the hard TAC as an option for managing this fishery or these fisheries. And then the third is a soft TAC. One reason why we decided to make sure that we do move forward with a hard TAC option is that the committee recognizes that the hard TAC likely would be necessary if the council does indeed decide to go with a sector approach, or if the council does decide to approve or to move forward with a dedicated access program such as the ITQ approach. So that's the principal reason why we've decided to not say to you today we're not going to consider, but we're recommending the council don't consider hard TACs for this fishery. That's not the case at all. It is one of the options that we will develop. Objective three is control mortality on juveniles as appropriate. The advisors had a few recommendations regarding this. It's already been alluded to, I think, by David Gethel, and that is right now there is no directed fishery on juvenile small mesh species such as whiting. Therefore, the advisors said don't consider size restrictions, minimum size restrictions, because there is no fishery on juveniles. The committee agreed that, indeed, we should have control mortality on juveniles as appropriate as an objective, but options to control fishing mortality on juveniles, such as area season fishing prohibitions, if we can determine that, indeed, those sorts of prohibitions would be useful, that should be a frameworkable item. So in this amendment, we're proposing that we have as frameworkable items strategies that would relate to controlling mortality on juveniles if, for example, we find ourselves suddenly faced with a juvenile fishery on those species. Objective four, allow for industry flexibility through dedicated access privileges. The advisors said yes, absolutely, move in that direction. They need that kind of flexibility. And the committee essentially is saying to you now, probably, that we should indeed do that, but only after the council develops a sector policy that cuts across all the different plans. Now, I understand that on Tuesday, this council decided to move forward with the development of some sort of a sector omnibus amendment. So if indeed that happens, then that would fit in rather well with what the committee wants to do at this point, and that's to develop some sort of a sector management approach for whiting, for small mesh multi-species. We did not make a recommendation to you that ITQs should be part of a dedicated access program. That, I guess you can say, is still very much in the early stages of our thinking. We can benefit greatly from anything you have to say here today regarding your desire for us to move in that direction as a dedicated access privilege concept. Our emphasis was on sector management, not on ITQs. And then finally, this fifth objective would be to simplify and improve management by having that standalone FMP. So, Council, that's where we stand at this time. A lot of work to do. So we now ask for your guidance as to whether or not, well, first of all, we ask for you to support, to adopt this motion that would set these specific objectives for us. And I think I provided enough information so you understand where we're going with all of the different strategies that would relate to our pursuing and achieving those specific objectives. That's the end of my presentation, Mr. Chairman, and again, that's the only motion we're prepared to provide today.
And that was a motion on behalf of the committee.
Yes.
Okay, any further discussion on these objectives? John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dave. As always, very thorough. I felt like I was at the committee meeting. And since I actually am on that committee, but had the luxury of basking in a tropical island versus going to that meeting and still maintaining my marriage. I went to the tropical island. But Dave has now brought me back to reality. I think the objectives seem to be fine. I don't have any problem with them. I just want to make sure that we have a clarification. Dave was saying that the committee was looking for direction. There was various direction that was provided on some of these items for the committee to digest. My sense is that the council is not eliminating further discussion on any of these methods to achieve these objectives. And the committee has not necessarily cast themselves in concrete at this particular point. They're kind of still doing some scoping themselves, scoping with the council. So as long as it's understood that there's an opportunity to provide different processes to achieve these objectives, even if they may have already been talked about at the committee level already, we just haven't eliminated them. Is that my sense, Dave, is correct at this particular point?
That is correct, and that's why the committee is respectful of the council's views that, indeed, it may want to go with dedicated access privileges in an ITQ direction that relates to the excess capacity objective, for example. And that's the reason why the hard TACs are in there as part of the analysis that we need to do. Therefore, the council will eventually be in a position to be more informed as to whether or not the ITQ is something that it would want to move forward with.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Bill Rule, then Paul Howard, then Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Dave did a very good job of encompassing everything there. But to the discussion we just ran about there a little bit ago with the matching the capacity and whatever, that's basically, in my mind, our job is we got to match what we can take from the resource. We also have a few other parts of this job that come into play and what we have up there, or as the committee put up there, I think it's imperative that we also be mindful of the fleet that already exists. You have X amount of boats in this fishery as it is now. I think Dave said it had landings of around 700, whatever. But when we're doing this consideration, we have to be mindful of the fact that some of this fleet has lost an opportunity in ground fish. They've lost an opportunity across the board on every fisheries. So to start down, I mean, the ITQ road might be the way to go. We got a lot of options up there on which way to go with this fishery. And I think we need to be very mindful of relieving some of the economic hardships that we've put on the industry across the board. When we're drafting this, we still have to match one to the other. That's the end of the day. That's how it has to come down. But we also have to be mindful that this fleet still has to exist to any portion we can. We can't keep cutting them out of piece by piece by piece.
Bart. I think a couple of things as we move forward is let's not forget the biology of the stock. I think the stock in the north is crashing, and it's a real anomaly. The exploitation level is very low, and that's good, but the stock is crashing. And I think that the PDT, you know, ought to be looking at that, too. What's going on? Is it discards in other fisheries? Is it, you know, environmental? But it doesn't make sense to have such a low exploitation and have the stock collapsing like that, I mean crashing. The other thing I wanted to mention is that when we've done allocated days at sea, it was over, I think, a 10-year period. When we allocated quota to the sectors, it was over a certain period. Yet in this fishery, we're only looking at 3 dates. And I think the council needs to know what is special about 1993, what is special about 95 VTR, and what is special about 81, where in the past we've always done, okay, we have a control date of 2003, let's take 1993 to 2003 and do something with that. That seems to be, you know, in my opinion, more fair and how we've done it in the past. And then why did we pick one particular date, and who picked that date and why? The council needs to know that, because it's kind of unique to IFQs, sectors. We're going to pick one date, so we ought to look at that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I've got to respond to a point that was made by Paul. You said that the resource was crashing. Red Hake? Silver Hake? Okay. I understand why you might say that, because there's been some newspaper coverage that suggests that there's a problem with Whiting, that abundance has dropped down. However, that conflicts with data we have before us regarding trends in biomass indices, and I'll point you to document number 3 and figure 2 in document number 3. You see that we have, again, as best we can judge biomass, bottom troll survey, 3-year moving average, kilograms per toe, ranging from, you know, 0, of course, up to 4.5. And as it stands right now, there's no evidence that the resource is crashing. The recent trend is actually for an increase in the biome. I'm sorry, Southern Silver Hake. I'm sorry, that's Southern Silver Hake. So Whiting, same thing, I believe. Whiting in the north. Okay. Whiting in the north, there is a decreasing trend. However, you know, the biomass is above the threshold value that, you know, we have set for ourselves. And the biomass levels are certainly reflective of the sorts of biomass we've had over most of the time series. Your point's valid, Paul, in that there's enough anecdotal information and observations made by fishermen themselves to suggest that there could be a problem with whiting. The data don't make a strong case for it, but still there is the downward trend. So I apologize for my misspeaking at the beginning where I was referencing southern Silver Hake.
Go ahead, Paul.
I had a little inside information to that as well by the Science Center. They're very perplexed about this, that it's crashing and the exploitation is so low. And they
don't say crashing. It's not crashing.
No. Okay.
It's a steep downhill decline.
It's going to go below overfished soon. In the north. The whiting in the north, Dave. It's going significantly.
The past 4 years, it's been on a steep decline, according to this. Jim Salisbury.
I'd like to get on to the question I had earlier, which is a different subject, and if you want to debate this status of this talk, you may. But my question is still, I mean, I understand from the committee's report that sectors may be the avenue that they have available right now, or they think is maybe the most likely avenue to deal with dedicated access privileges, but this is really a question, is what is the status, right, or the likely status, if anybody knows, of what's going to happen regarding the Magnuson Act's criteria for how you would deal with dedicated access privileges. It seems obviously if you were trying to do a standalone plan, this could be an easy one to do a straightforward ITQ program. But if that's not in the cards, maybe we should know it, and so you'd see what the route is going to be. And this is just a question. I have no.
I think your colleague next to you has some insight.
I've been working on a committee for the last year that is National Committee working to come up with new guidelines for the service to work with for dedicated access privileges, and I just got the last draft, but I haven't read it. And we should be publishing that, I suspect, probably in around February for new guidelines.
Pat.
But, of course, at this point, in terms of any changes to the Act, it doesn't look likely anyway that it'll be reauthorized this session. And so they basically start from scratch next session. And even if they can get it through next session, nobody's recommending not authorizing ITQs or dedicated access privileges, just that there need to be some guidelines for it.
Science Center, did you want to make a comment?
Yes. A couple of comments. One is, Dave Pierce, when I gave my report on the first day, I had mentioned the qualitative observation. I don't think you were here then, but the when I gave my report, I mentioned that from the latest bottom trawl survey this fall, there was a qualitative observation on the northern edge of Georges Bank and the Gulf of Maine that there were fewer silver hake than expected. And the data are not audited or released yet, but when they are, we'll take a closer look at that. But it supports that steep declining trend that people were mentioning. The other thing is when you were talking about how to match the take or the catch with the stock biomass, I just want to remind you a little bit about the stock assessment results from last year. And the Science Center attempted to go further with the science and actually get some real good estimates of fishing mortality rate and absolute biomass. But the models or the attempts that were made were rejected by the SARC reviewers. So we're pretty much left with looking at the survey index as our standard. So the advance that we had hoped for in the science wasn't approved by the outside reviewers, and therefore, probably when you try to figure out what the quota can be relative to the stock size, it will have to remain very much geared toward the survey index, and which gets back to calibration issues and so forth with the changing over to the new vessel. Thank you.
David.
Yeah, with regard to what you said when I wasn't here 2 days ago, the data brings us only through 2004, so 2005, 2006, perhaps it shows that we have crashed. I'll be open to that suggestion. And I'm guessing, okay, that the committee will be faced with looking at plan development team advice similar to what was considered and adopted by this council yesterday on monkfish. If you recall, on monkfish, we've moved away from reliance on the bottom trawl survey data that we're setting TACs that originate from a number of different approaches. I'm assuming we may be faced with that strategy for setting TACs, and if we are given that kind of information, then that would certainly serve as a basis for the committee's evaluating, you know, what's available for harvest, and then matching that up with, the numbers of vessels that could catch that amount.
Okay, we've got 25 minutes left. We've got a motion on the board which deals specifically with the objectives that the committee developed at the last committee meeting, and I'd like to just dispense with that one way or the other, and then spend the remaining 20 or 25 minutes going through the document. If the council's comfortable with the discussions that are contained in this document in the form of motions, even though we're not going to officially take up those motions today, then fine. But if there are specific omissions or directions that you think the committee's heading in that you'd like to either get more information on or steer them or nudge them in a different direction, this is a good time to do it. Otherwise, when they meet again, they're going to continue down this road. So, any further discussion on the objectives? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the objectives on the board, raise your hand. 15. Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Okay, we'll open it up to other issues that are contained within the document or things that aren't in the document that you'd like the committee to look at. Any further direction for the committee? Tom Hill.
Yeah, I just want to be sure that there were a number of issues that were raised around the table earlier, and I'm presuming that we don't need a formal vote in order to have those issues considered. If we do, I'm happy to offer a motion, but I didn't hear anybody object to at least the things that John said about matching capacity and what I raised in terms of having a complete range of alternatives for potential limited access type programs, and I'd like a better description at some point about the criteria, as I think it was Paul raised, about why, which timeline we're using for history and what the rationale is behind that when they do the document. I think all three of those areas would improve or would help to have the council have a better understanding of what's being proposed and give us a range of alternatives.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I think I could answer one of those questions on the date. 81 was there because Amendment 12 at least did some analysis of the 81 date. 93 is the advent of the dealer database, and 95 is the advent of the VTR. Or it's not the advent of the VTR, it's when the VTRs were considered to be at least reliable enough to use for something. So the dates didn't come out of thin air. They had very specific reasons for them.
Tom.
If I could, thank you. And that's helpful. I my only response to that would be I'm not sure that we want to be predicating, I say this respectfully, maybe there's another way of looking at it, I'm sure there is, but I'm not sure we want to be predicating how we allocate opportunity in the fishery based on our data points. I think we want to be trying to figure out who's qualified in the fishery based on something that's a little more reasoned than just whether we have specific timelines on whether data was available, certain evaluations of quality data. I would hope we would do it based on a different criteria than that, or at least that may be one of them, but I would hope that it's more inclusive than that.
Okay. I guess the dates, the way the motion reads isn't clear, but I think I'm interpreting it appropriately, which is that the committee's looking at those dates as the beginning points to consider qualification, and it could be from 93 to today or the control date, or 95 to the control date, or 81 to the control date.
Oh, really? Oh,
right, it's not just on this day you had to have done something.
Oh, okay.
It was sort of intuitive, but it doesn't necessarily say that. I've been keeping a small list of issues that have come up, the issue of matching capacity with the resource, the issue of having limited access in some areas and then leaving other areas open to new entrants. That was another issue that the council talked about. The issue of the qualifying periods we've gone over. The range of poundage requirements, is it inclusive enough? The issue of dealer data versus VTR data. There are other issues that came up that I didn't recite here. Oh, and also the dedicated access privilege varieties, whether in the form of an individual quota or a cooperative or a sector. Tom.
Yeah, and I think you said it. I just want to be sure. I think what I hope to see in the document is a evaluation of whether, of not only having the potential for an open access fishery in conjunction with a limited access fishery in certain areas, but having the opposite of that. In other words, it's sort of suggested in here that we might have open access in some areas, and I would like to, my experience is that's not necessarily a very positive thing to have to end up with, that we fixed it every time we've done it, and I would hope that there are other alternatives in the document that cover not doing that.
Pat.
Thanks. I just want to reiterate my concerns with using the VTR data and going back to 1981 and being clear that if you take those two options out, then you only end up with one viable qualification criteria. So I just wanted to put it in that context. And then the other thing is the document says, and I think I heard David say at least once, that the hard tack option would be tied to dedicated access privileges. I would hope there would be a hard tack option that's separate from dedicated access privileges as well.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think from reading the committee report document, it seems to me the committee's done a really good job of laying out the basics in such a way that almost any variable could be achieved. And I think the comments we've heard have helped maybe improve on that a little bit. But as I understand it, the committee is also asking for counsel's just kind of a little bit of a hint as to if there's anything that's really problematic or anything that we seem to all be sort of heading for. And in that respect, I would say, you've done a great job at making almost anything possible, but I think the hard tack options are important in there in order to be able to do either a sector-type limited access program or a directly formulated limited access program. And that, in my view, some of the issues that we might fight over is, like, for example, whether you need an open access area in order to accommodate people who had historic landings but don't have any anymore, or the opposite of that, as Tom Hill suggested. All those issues can be dealt with through a limited access ITQ type program, and probably this is a good area to really deeply explore that. And that's my opinion. Thank you. If that's of any help to the committee, I don't know, but.
Phil, and then Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Jim just hit it a little bit on the head. I mean, my take on it is the committee really didn't figure we was going to draft the plan the first meeting. We put out what we thought was that, and we come back to the council to find out where we actually should be heading. And to the issue of the open access, we threw that out there. I don't think anybody on the committee actually figured to leave a whole lot open, but the reasoning for putting that out there is there historically was fisheries that are outside of the range that's there right now. There was, when I was a kid, a fishery off North Carolina was there for the winters. That doesn't exist anymore, hasn't existed for years. There was a fishery under Long Island for years that was right tight to the beach that hasn't been there for years. And what we don't want to do is lock that fishery out from ever reappearing. There's probably some opportunity in the Gulf of Maine and in the northern section for a fishery that hasn't been allowed because of gear requirements and what have you that could possibly develop over the course of time. And I think we just want to – I don't know that open access is what we really want, but what we don't want to do is lock out any potential fishery that might occur if it's not going to hurt the resource. I mean, the resource is the number one question, but my fear is you draw up a plan that doesn't allow this to go forward when it develops. If there's no harm to the resource, then it should be allowed to develop. And we just really want to leave some kind of, in my mind, leave some kind of vehicle there to open this, to not lock out a potential fishery that develops. That was one. And two, to the stock question before, I mean, when you kind of look at them numbers, yeah, the northern area went there. But this might be a potential of what happens when you draw a line in an ocean, basically an artificial line. Because you look at the southern area, it's on its way up, but the northern area is going down. Not to the same degree, maybe, or whatever. You know, maybe the fish went south for the winter.
Pat?
I just want to respond to that because I think that people need to think differently about this issue of allowing fisheries beyond the current range or where fisheries might develop in the future. The fact is that if you qualify, say, 100 boats, there is nothing precluding those boats from fishing in any developing fishery in the future or fishing beyond the existing range in the future, either by the current owner or by someone who purchases the boat to do that. So it doesn't necessarily mean qualifying more boats, is my point.
Dave.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I guess, just in response to the response, would be that the committee was concerned and has been with other species. This came up with general category scallops, I guess, that you could end up in a situation 10 years from now, 20 years from now, because this plan, you know, will have some life to it, of a resource that appears or develops or expands well beyond the range of the current fleet. And so you'll have folks with still in the fishing business that won't be able to fish a resource off of their own beach, and someone 300 miles away could. And I think that would be just wouldn't be right, would be perceived as unfair and somehow strange. And I think it even conjures up images of, you know, and it's said this way sometimes, foreign vessels coming in to fish our waters, that type of concept. And that's, you know, that's what we were trying to address. The other point, I guess, that behind all of this discussion of hard tax or soft tax and so forth was, you know, the degree of uncertainty in the assessment, the lack of confidence that was expressed at scoping meetings and from those in the fishery of the actual accounting, how good the accounting is of landings, so that if you set hard tax, you may be well below what it should be, the ability or inability to monitor effectively the current status of the stock, so that when you set quotas, you know where you are, you're setting the right levels. It's sort of reminiscent of some other species. Scup comes to mind, that we have this hard tack, and yet we really don't have a very good idea at all of how many fish are out there and what quota should be set. So that sort of underlies all of this discussion of how far down the road do we go on dedicated access privileges, setting hard tacks, and so forth.
Jim?
I would just, in Pat's last comment, I'm not sure I understood what you said. Were you say the impact of what you're saying is that, for example, if even if you allocate to, say, 150 vessels, that doesn't preclude sales, or if you had an ITQ that gave everything to 10, it doesn't preclude somebody from buying into that IQ or getting in and out. So that there's still a means for people to gain access to the fishery in some way. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes, that, and it doesn't mean that the existing participants just can't expand their fishing range geographically either.
Okay. I'll ask the committee chair, do you have a good handle on the discussion today? The issues that have been expressed, both in the positive and the negative?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is the council comfortable with the discussion we've had so far on this document? Anything else anyone wants to add to it? David?
I have one last question. As long as we get the full council here, we keep hearing a reluctance to use the VTR data. I'd like a little more guidance as to why. For example, the transfers at sea, they're only recorded through the VTR. How are we going to get at that issue if we can't use the VTR data? So if we can get a little more guidance on that, I mean, if we, you know, it would be appreciative for the committee.
It's my understanding, in speaking with the committee chair this morning, that the committee is working with staff from the center to get at some of the issues that existed back in, it was in Amendment 12, in terms of data quality and integrity. So I would hope that, actually, I would turn it around and hope that the committee could come back to the council and tell them how they would tackle that issue. David.
Yeah, that's my expectation, Mr. Chairman. Plus, Pat, if I may, your staff indicated that we would be provided, I guess, well, staff, our staff will be provided with the specific reasons as to why the disapproval was provided years ago. So if I assume some letter or some memo will be made available to staff to help us better understand all of the, you know, the reasons why.
Pat.
Yeah, the two responses. I mean, I think you need to talk about this at the next committee meeting, and we, and I'm sure the Senate staff will all come prepared to do that. We're not saying don't use the VTR data. We're saying that it shouldn't be the primary database. It should be a supporting database. And there are ways to get at things like the transfer at sea. In terms of the disapproval the last time, it was really based mostly on National Standard 4 and equity issues. And in particular, this issue of allowing two different sets of qualifying criteria in the fishery. And yet, despite the different qualifying criteria, what people qualified for was exactly the same. So there was one more, much more liberal qualifying criteria. There was a much more restrictive qualifying criteria. And yet once you qualified, you got effectively the same permit. And so that was really what drove the disapproval last time. But some of these other issues came up, but they weren't necessarily part of the disapproval.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, we'll take a quick break. And Chad?
I just wanted to make sure that the council was clear on what the committee had, or at least what my interpretation of what the committee had decided for qualification dates. There's basically five date ranges that the committee decided on. One was the 1981 date. You have to look at it in two ways. There's the inception date and the terminal date for the range. Okay, so there's three inception dates, 1981, and that would use the weigh-out data and then the dealer data post-1993. There was the 1993 date, which would use the dealer data, and there was the 1995 date, which would use only the VTR data. Those were what the committee approved. For terminal dates, there's the control date, March of 2003, and then there was December 31st of 2005. So there's, whatever that multiple is, there's six different qualification date ranges that the committee approved. And I would like to point out that if any of those the council or the committee or the service don't feel has any hope, the less time the PDT spends analyzing those, and they do take a lot of time, particularly on ones where the data is shaky and needs a lot of massaging, the more time we'll be able to spend on these other issues that have been pointed out today.
We always run into trouble with control dates, using them or not using them. Why would we use 2005 beyond the control date?
Frequently, the control date is used as a date that somebody had to have held a valid permit on, but not necessarily the terminal date for landings. For example, in Amendment 12, they used the control date and said you had to have a valid permit on this date, but they accepted landings up until the year that the amendment went through.
I take it from these comments that right now that's the range of possibilities of qualifying years. And with Pat's comments regarding, don't rely on any just one data set to do that, it would imply that you'd probably want to have a range that is shorter than 1995 because you'd have all of the early all of those tools available to you to use, and you wouldn't do anything after 2005, for example. So you're somewhere within that range, and we still don't know what the committee is choosing as the actual qualifying, the array of qualifying criteria that they might put forward. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
For the committee?
Yeah, that's true. And the principal reason for it is that when we began our meeting, Chad made it very clear to us that the database that we had to work with was extremely preliminary and there were a lot of inaccuracies. So that started us off on a bit of a shaky footing and gave us good reason to be a bit cautious as to how we proceeded. But now Chad understands and the planning development team understands better where we're going, and they're just continuing to do what they said they would do, and that is to get us a database that we're going to have some confidence in, that we can analyze it and then bring it forward to this council for your consideration. That is the implications of that database and what the analyses reveal.
Okay, anything else? Right.
Frank, I mean, I just want to make one comment about the stock ID and the line drawn in the sand, as it were. It wasn't an arbitrary line. It was actually a document that was produced, a really, really excellent document in 1984 on the stock ID of Silver Hake. It was also published as a manuscript in the North American Journal of Fishery Management by a young biologist at the center who had darker hair and a darker beard back then. Thanks.
Look forward to reading that.
Was it Fred?
Okay. Looks like we're ready to wrap up Whiting. Now just remember that the Nelson Clause is in effect on this document as it develops. Okay. We'll take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back and have a presentation. Thank you.